Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Ben.
My name is Noel. You ever had spicy honey, Ben?
Yes.
It's pretty good. Like putting it in a coffee, it makes it like a spicy coffee, or you put it on some chicken, like a hot chicken kind of situation. It's good stuff.
You know who else is pretty good, Noel? That's our super producer, Casey Pegram.
And spicy.
And spicy indeed. Now, have you ever been in a situation where a stranger approaches you and there seems to be this instant chemistry, this instant connection? You just, as they say, click.
Are you asking me if I've ever been propositioned?
I'm asking, maybe it was a proposition. How'd your story turn out?
It was an indecent proposal, Ben. That's what it was.
You were in an indecent proposal situation?
I was indecently proposed to, yes.
Oh.
And I accepted.
Oh, how'd it work out?
It was very indecent. I can't go into it here. It's a family show.
It's weird because hopefully in this situation that was not a proposal was indecent for hopefully some family-friendly reasons. You know, maybe you guys just liked each other.
We just sat around and told a lot of really blue jokes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes when people get hit upon or propositioned out of the blue, there is an ulterior motive involved.
Wait a minute. People aren't always as they seem, Ben?
That's true, Noel. That's true.
It hurts me.
Today's episode is about spycraft, but maybe not in the way you think. It turns out that one of the most famous espionage strategies in history is seducing someone. There's, you know, have you ever seen the show Americans? The Americans?
No, I haven't, but I've been told that it's quite good and that I should watch it.
Well, I don't like to tell people what they should do, but I enjoyed the show.
I should get me to a television situation right now.
Casey, have you seen The Americans?
I have not, no.
You don't really watch TV shows much, do you?
No, it takes a lot for me to check out a TV series, so nothing against The Americans.
What about Law & Order? You ever seen that?
A few times, yeah.
Casey on the case.
So the trade name for this kind of spycraft via seduction is the honey trap. Yep. And spies use their sexual prowess, their charisma, and, you know, that thrill of living life on the edge as bait. This is like, you know, how there have been rumors bouncing around for months, if not years, about the concept of compromat.
Yes.
Right? Well, what is that?
Also known as compromand.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the same thing. I mean, it's just the idea. I mean, it's basically just blackmail material, right? It's like when someone is compromised, whether you know something about a crime they've committed or you have, let's say, a tape of them getting peed on or some such other nefarious behavior, that would be considered compromat or compromat. Are they just different tenses? Why are there two different words?
That's an interesting question. I know compromat is the Russian phrase, which has been picked up by the U.S. media.
It has been making the rounds much more these days than I'd ever heard it in the past in terms of like in the parlance of our times, to quote the Big Lebowski. But there's a really I haven't seen the film, but it's got Jennifer Lawrence in it. I believe it's called Red Sparrow, if I'm not mistaken. And she plays a Russian spy that is like trained in these sexual wiles. It's literally a school for young women that are trained to do this very thing.
It's a huge plot point in The Americans, without spoiling it. The Americans is about sleeper agents living in the U.S. And in both Red Sparrow and The Americans, there's this method of spycraft via seduction employed called honey traps, or you may have heard it referred to as honey pots. These tactics have been around for a long, long, long time. In fact, as our pal Gabe pointed out off air, the earliest honey trap on record, maybe, this is how old it is, it's biblical. One of the oldest ones that we know of is the anecdotal betrayal of Samson
right.
by Delilah.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic story. And then, what is it? She, like, sneaks in and cuts his hair, wherein all of his magical strongman powers lie.
Mm-hmm. In exchange for 1,100 pieces of silver.
That's right. And then I think he gets his head lobbed off at some point. That may be in a different story, though. Salome is the one who has Samson's head cut off.
And so, whether or not there was a real Samson and a real Delilah and real superpower hair, we know that this practice has continued and continues even in the present day. Every single intelligence agency across the planet did something like this, but it was an especially common practice in China and in Russia. For all our U.S. listeners, the Central Intelligence Agency does not officially comment on whether its agents use sexuality to get info. But off the record, some retired CIA folks say it could happen. Today, we'd like to just present a few cases of honey traps. This is really a situation in which the truth is stranger than fiction. We talked about Samson, but let's dive into Mata Hari.
And really quickly, it was not Salome had nothing to do with Samson. That was John the Baptist, who she had beheaded. And in the opera Salome, she sings a really creepy aria to his severed head. Excuse me for mixing up my stories there. Please continue, Ben.
So Mata Hari, you may have heard the phrase before, M-A-T-A-H-A-R-I. Mata Hari was a Dutch woman who had a pretty wild life. She had spent a few years as a dancer in Java in Indonesia. During World War I, she was arrested because the French forces had discovered that a German military official in Spain was sending her money. They caught the telegrams.
Intercepted. She was accused of passing secrets to the Germans, French secrets to the Germans, secrets that she had potentially gotten by, working her mojo on certain French political officials and military officials as well. So she went on trial, and Mata Hari defended herself quite vocally, quite robustly.
It was an interesting defense, too.
It really was. She said that she was this attaché, which is like a staffer for a diplomat or an ambassador, that she was his mistress and that he was just sending her, sugar daddy type gifts.
Exactly. She said, no spycraft, just a little bit of sleazebaggery. Her arguments did not win over the judges. She was executed on October 15th, 1917, by firing squad.
Ooh, and a nice little detail here. She refused to be blindfolded.
She wanted to see it coming. After the close of the war, the French forces admitted that they didn't really have any evidence against her. Most modern historians have concluded that she wasn't shot because she was running a honey trap, but she was instead executed to send a message to anyone who might follow her example. So the lesson here is that looking as though one is participating in a honey trap is as dangerous as actually being in one. And we have so many examples of these. A lot of them occur during wartime. Actually, a lot of the ones we know about occur during wartime because, again, this stuff is maybe still happening today.
Oh, I mean, I have no doubt that it's, I mean, it's tale as old as time. It works, right? Like, why would it not be happening? I'm pretty confident that our government is doing this all the time, but who am I to say? That's not what we're here for today. Let's talk about the story of Nora Astorga, who was able to seduce a Nicaraguan general and then assassinate him. That's part of it, too. We haven't even talked about the ability to lure people into compromising situations, not just to, steal secrets from them or to get compromise on them, but to actually kill them.
And there's another example here. An Israeli technician, Mordecai Vanunu, who is most famous or infamous for whistleblowing about Israel's nuclear capabilities, when he spilled the atomic beans in 1986, he ran away, left the country, and went to London, and there he was seduced by a woman who led him to Israeli intelligence assets in Rome.
This is under Mossad, correct?
Mossad is the intelligence agency,
that's right.
Yeah. And they caught him. I mean, we know honeypots can occur with a number of ultimate goals. One, to assassinate people. Two, to kidnap them or gain custody of them. The third, and perhaps one of the most insidious, is to control people over time. We're talking about blackmail.
Yeah, like long term, long game. Like that's that. Can you imagine being that beholden to somebody else where you just couldn't live your normal life? You had to like literally live for another person or another organization.
At some point, wouldn't you just have to get in front of it? Just tell your spouse, look, I messed up. But I don't want to ruin the country over this.
You would think that. Maybe, you know, there are worse things than being told you're cheating on your spouse, though. And I imagine some of those triggers might be pulled as well. Like, you know, threatening to kill family members and things like that. But that's outside of what we're talking about today.
Oh, my favorite honeypot story of all time. And I know we had talked about this off air. So there was this Indonesian president, Ahmad Sukarno. He was the victim, the quote-unquote victim, of a honeypot blackmail attempt by the KGB in the USSR. They made a videotape of him being intimate with several Russian women disguised as flight attendants. So this is very not safe for work, NSFW. Here's the thing, though. When they came to him and they said, you know, President Sukarno, we have video of you. He was like, all right, well, let me see the video. Like, we do not think you would be pleased if this get out. And then he watched the video and he was over the moon. He was like, oh, awesome. You guys filmed it? I look great. He was like, I look great. Can I have copies of this? Because I want to show it to the crew.
Totally. And so basically he didn't care.
He didn't care.
At all.
No.
Like, he was proud. And he was like, go ahead, distribute it. It'll make me look like a real baller.
Yeah. He had a weird set of priorities. That's the most famous case of it backfiring. So we've been talking a lot about bedrooms today, and now let's talk about them in a little more of a wholesome way.
A platonic way, if you will.
Yes, yes, if you will.
Do you have a relationship with your bed, Ben?
I have a deep and abiding relationship with my bed because I finally met the mattress for me. It's a Casper mattress, which I've had for a number of years now, and I love it. And I think you have one, too.
I do have one, and I'll tell you, I slept on a non-Casper mattress last night, my friend, and I woke up with all kinds of cricks and cracks and aches. It was not fun, and it really made me realize why Casper is such a big deal, because it's a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you and me get the best rest of your life one night at a time.
That's right. You know, think about it, folks. We spend one-third of our lives sleeping, so shouldn't we at least try to be comfortable for that 33.33333% of our lives?
Yeah, it's true. Casper knows this, and that's why their products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, providing supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies.
That's right. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce.
If there's one thing I love, it's multiple foams.
Let's talk turkey. They have affordable prices, but why? That's because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you.
Not to mention the hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied. And you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free Sleep On It trial.
That's right. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/ridiculous and using ridiculous at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
That's $100 towards select mattresses when you visit casper.com/ridiculous and use the code ridiculous at checkout.
While we're on Russians, Noel, is it true that the Russian government perfected the honey trap?
They certainly made it into a bit of an art form. There's a really interesting quote from a former KGB agent saying that the Soviet intelligence agencies didn't ask Russian women to stand up for their country, but asked them to lay down.
Oof.
Yeah, and again, like we're talking about that movie Red Sparrow, the idea of the Sparrow School, it trained these young, very intelligent women to use their bodies and their intellect kind of like as like a super weapon, you know? Mm-hmm. So it absolutely was a part of their tactics. and a particularly famous Cold War spy case involves Clayton Lone Tree, who was a Marine Corps guard, security guard, who was taken in by a female Soviet officer and then was forced to share classified documents through a honeypot type scheme. And in 1987, he was convicted of espionage.
The first Marine convicted of espionage. Yep.
Oh, gosh. Can you imagine the shame? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, to be exposed like that and to be literally, you know, put on trial by your own country who you, like, you know, believed in enough to join the Marine Corps to serve.
I feel like I'm already immune to any kind of honeypot or compromat because, you know, anytime someone hits on me, I feel like we're both just very disappointed in general.
Oh, Ben, don't sell yourself short. You could be compromised.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
You could be indecently proposed to.
Well, technically it's possible because, you know, this tactic on the Russian side did not disappear with the fall of the Soviet Union. Recently, a political satirist in Russia, a guy named Viktor Shenderovich, and I'm butchering the Russian there, he was filmed cheating on his spouse with a young woman whose name was Katya. And weirdly enough, the same young woman, the same Katya, had also seduced like six other critics of the government. And then there was another series of traps. One appeared to catch an American diplomat in 2009. The State Department says that that episode was fabricated, that nothing actually happened, but the government of Russia made it up for some reason. And Russia's not the only game in town here.
It's true. China was recently discovered to be using this technique as well, though you got to imagine that, you know, again, tale as old as time. I could imagine it going back to much, much farther in the past than this. But in 2009, it was discovered that Deputy Mayor of London, Ian Clement, was actually drugged and seduced, the old 1-2 punch, in a hotel room in Beijing. When he awakened, he found that his BlackBerry was gone, and then he admitted that he, quote, fell for the oldest trick in the book, which is why I find it hard to believe that we're just now saying, oh, yeah, China does this too.
right.
That seems like a little bit, duh.
Just going to go out on a limb and say if you are an important diplomat, if you are a government military official or a corporate tycoon and you're hanging out at a hotel bar, just be skeptical. Use critical thinking when someone sidles up to you. Now, I know it sounds like we're, you know, being a bit restrictive because so far our stories have all been about dudes being seduced. However, make no mistake, women have also been the targets of honey trap operations.
Are you talking about Spymaster Wolf?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it's true. During the Cold War, East German intelligence chief Marcus Wolf sent agents of Stasi, which is a lot of these intelligence agency names are new to me. Stasi would have been the East German intelligence agency. Is that correct? Sent agents of Stasi called Romeo spies. Love that. Into West Germany to work their masculine wiles on powerful women and you know, get at those secrets.
Yep. And this was a smaller part of his larger operation. You see, this spymaster, Marcus Wolf, ran the largest honey trap operation that we know of in human history. In the 1950s, Wolf had this thought. He said, there are a lot of dead German men. He said a lot of the German men who would be of marrying age have died during World War II, and more German women are becoming professionals, are pursuing higher echelons of government and industry. And he said, you know what? I bet it's lonely at the top. Maybe we could work something out. Maybe we could send a few, you know, interesting young men of charm and intrigue to talk to these lonely folks at the height of industry. So he set up this special department of the Stasi, and he staffed it with his most intelligent officers, but also the most handsome. Those are the ones you're talking about, right, Noel? The Romeo spies.
It is indeed. And there's a really great history account of this on foreignpolicy.com, the history of the honey trap that I highly recommend checking out. And I think they might be using a little bawdy double entendre here when they say that thanks to the Romeo spies and their honey traps, the Stasi penetrated most levels of the West German government and industry. Or maybe that's just my filthy, filthy mind.
I don't know, man. Maybe you're getting honey trapped with that article. Don't let them get in your head.
I know, it's true. At one point, the East Germans even sent spies to infiltrate NATO and was able to extract some very crucial information on the Western deployment of nukes.
Well, you know how they got caught, right? This scheme was going gangbusters until it became useless, and pretty quickly. West German counterintelligence authorities figured out that you could tell a Romeo spy by the haircut. No lie, it sounds so simple, but the spies had these practical short back and sides haircuts,
mm-hmm.
similar, not quite a high and tight, but, you know, a clean cut haircut. And in West Germany, the hairstyles tended to be more elaborate and more complicated. So,
what, like pompadours?
It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
West German haircuts. So counterintelligence officers would get the heads up from a guard at a train station or on the train, and then they'd be like, follow that haircut. And the intelligence agencies would follow the spy, and they would arrest them as soon as they did something wrong, because they had to wait for them to do something wrong.
Yes, and three of these women were rooted out, and they went on trial. But they didn't really get the book thrown at them so much as just a little slap on the wrist. I think one of them who got into West German intelligence got 6.5 years. That's not really a slap on the wrist, but it's certainly better than death, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was largely because of public kind of sympathy towards her. In West Germany, they kind of identified with these women. Wolf, the spymaster in question, was on trial twice, and this was after the collapse of communism, but he only got a 2-year sentence that had been suspended. And yeah, that's really interesting to me. The guy that kind of like masterminded this whole thing got maybe the most lenient sentence of all.
And he's a complicated character. He went on to pursue a second career as an author. He is anomalous amidst the players in the intelligence game, spy masters, because he published an autobiography called Man Without a Face. Great title. And in this, he attempts to set the record straight, more or less, or at least rationalize his actions. He said he never put pressure on any officers to use honeypot tactics in the course of their work. He said it was up to their discretion. He said, quote, "They were sharp operators who realized that a lot can be done with sex. This is true in business and espionage because it opens up channels of communication more quickly than other approaches." And of course, he said, "As long as there is espionage, there will be Romeos seducing unsuspecting targets with access to secrets." And here's where I think he's kind of trying to redeem himself a little. He says, look, I was running an intelligence service, not a lonely hearts club.
Oof.
So he's like, look, I'm not a matchmaker. I'm not telling people to date each other.
Yeah. He was something of an espionage pimp type figure, though, in a way, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't think you can distance yourself in that way.
No. What do you think, Ben? Was James Bond a Romeo spy? He used seduction quite often on powerful women.
James Bond was a terrible spy.
He was a bad spy.
He says his name every time he meets people.
That's true. And you've mentioned that before.
Yeah.
But he's 007. Maybe his name really is. I don't know. Like, I wonder.
You know, there's a new Bond film coming out.
Is it still with Daniel Craig?
I think there's a new Bond who is going. Or the rumor I heard is there's a female Bond.
That's right.
I think it's Daniel Craig and this kind of new person.
So he's going to pass the torch?
Yeah, something like that. I think that's the idea anyway.
Casey on the case.
Yeah, indeed.
We've got to check it out.
Yeah, I don't know. The new ones with Craig are okay. They're kind of fun.
I like James Bond. I like seeing a terrible spy.
Yeah.
But the action sequences are great, and I love some intrigue. Remember that guy Mads Mikkelsen playing Le Chouf?
Right. He's one of Casey Pegram's French associates. It's La Bouche and Le Chouf. Yeah. What does Le Chouf mean? Does that mean like...
C-H-I-F-F-R-E.
Yeah, Le Chiffre, which in French means like digits. It's literally kind of the numeral, the 0 to 9. That you would write to represent a number, but it can also mean like figures, statistics, you know, quarterly results, something like that would be les chiffres. It's surprisingly nuanced in French. There's like le nombre, which is like the number, numéro, which is also kind of like number, but would be more like for addresses and that kind of thing. And then les chiffres, which again, digits and figures and that kind of thing.
And he's like a big gambler in Casino Royale, so that makes sense.
There you go.
Casey on the case.
Big time. Double, triple case.
So this episode's a little weird for us because we usually like to examine things that happened before sometime around the 1990s. However, this is still occurring today, and a question that was on a lot of our fellow listeners' minds here was almost certainly, were there any real Red Sparrows? Was there any sand to this movie, any real-life stuff, not just single agents, but was there some sort of school? Well, according to Jason Matthews, who is a CIA veteran with more than 30 years in the game, Red Sparrow is somewhat real, or at least inspired by true events. The Soviet Union really did once run a school to train young women in being professional seducers of diplomats.
Oh, good. So I don't sound like a complete moron for referencing that movie several times.
No, it was prescient.
Huzzah!
And this is strange because it has a lot in common with what we see in the art of the con. You know, when we see scam artists, they prey on people's baser desires and their human failings. So if you get anything from today's episode, first off, if a stranger comes up to you and is really trying to put the moves on you, just be aware that they might have an ulterior motive. You know what I mean? Not saying that love at first sight doesn't happen. It's just a thing you should think critically about.
Well, according to the Beatles, it happens all the time. Love at first sight. They believe it anyway. I like to believe it. I would like to believe it.
I love the Beatles.
Ben, can I ask you a question, a personal question?
Sure.
Can you tell what my shirt is?
It's a painting.
It looks almost like kind of like a mutant Simpsons on the couch situation.
That's correct.
It's cool. I really dig it.
Thanks, Casey. You are close too, Ben. It is a painting, but it like you can see Marge's hair there and like a weird blobby Bart and Lisa. I ordered this sight unseen off of an Instagram ad. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think it was going to come, but it came. That's all I got.
It's the power of shipping.
Power of shipping, indeed. And the power of belief that good things will happen. But you're right, Ben. It's important to keep your wits about you in these situations. You just can't take everything at face value. You don't want to, like, be suspicious of everyone that you meet and think that everyone that's showing any interest to you is some kind of secret super spy. But, you know, take care of yourselves out there, people.
And let us know if you have ever witnessed a honey trap in operation. We totally understand if you would rather not disclose your full name, et cetera, et cetera. There are so many ways to get in touch with us. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter as Ridiculous History, Ridiculous History Show, or some derivation thereof. You can also follow us on our personal adventures. I'm on Instagram as @BenBolin and Twitter as @BenBolinHSW.
And you can find me on Instagram exclusively @HowNow. Noel Brown. Big thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme, super producer Casey Pegram on the case left and right, Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit, Gabe Lugier, research associate, we love you.
Eve's Jeffcoat, of course, check out her history shows as well on our network. And where would we be without Young Quizzles, a.k.a. The Quizster, a.k.a. Jonathan Strickland,
a.k.a. Quizzlers Makes Mouths Happy. Remember that tagline for Twizzlers?
Mm-hmm.
It makes mouths happy. It's kind of clunky, isn't it?
Feels problematic.
Yeah. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.